Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
What's going on? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. So excited to be here talking with you about your still first place Toronto Blue Jays. It's only the end of April, but we can still start saying that. There's never a bad time to note that the team is in first place. As I mentioned, this is Spin Rate. We talk about the Blue Jays for The Athletic. If you haven't subscribed to The Athletic, you gotta go to theathletic.com/spinrate. You gotta subscribe to the show as well. We do it twice a week. On the weekends with Caitlin McGrath, who covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic, and then the one you are hearing right now, joined by the newest member of the Spin Rate team, former Blue Jays starter, Ricky Romero. Ricky, how are you? Are you excited? You're doing great?
Doing great, man. Yeah, it's exciting. Jays are playing good baseball. I feel like the city's getting even more excited. And yeah, that game two nights ago was pretty crazy, huh?
Absolutely. I think that's what we're going to talk about today. We got a few things we're going to talk about. I want to talk about the Blue Jays and those the excitement of the games, which is something to keep your eye on, is what I will say. It's exciting as a fan, but it's something to keep your eye on, as well as some of the offense, where it's coming from and where it's maybe not coming from. And then some just general what's going on. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the ball. But let's start with the exciting games. So the Blue Jays are playing some really exciting games, taking advantage of kind of a weakness in maybe the Boston Red Sox, who their bullpen, when I see the guys coming out of there, I'm surprised the bullpen's not better at times, because they've got some nasty dudes that come flying out of that bullpen. But of course, the game you're talking about, Blue Jays made a big comeback, down 3 against the Red Sox late, end up winning on a Ramiel Tapia sack fly when the Blue Jays loaded the bases in extra innings. But this is not a new thing, right? The Blue Jays are playing a ton of one-run games. Right now, as we record this, they are 6-1 in one-run games. From your perspective, what does that say about the team? I have a feeling I know what you might say, but what do you think it says about the team that's really gotten off to a hot start in terms of winning all these close games?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest thing was, and we saw it last year, Drew, where they lost a lot of these close games, and it came back to bite them in the ass at the end. And what we're seeing right now is, one, they have a legit closer who's coming in and shutting the door. And two, yes, we talked a little bit about it over text yesterday about the offense and how they haven't been clicking. But the fact that they remind me a lot of the 09 Yankees, the 09, 2010, 11 Red Sox, where they were so patient at the plate. And we're seeing that they're running deep counts on these guys. And I mentioned it yesterday with Nick Pivetta a couple nights ago. Great stuff. He's got nasty stuff, man. And they made him work. They made him work till they got him out of there in the fifth inning. So we're seeing the battles that are going on at the plate. We might not be seeing it on the scoreboard with the runs, but they're going out there and putting up good ABs. They're not giving at bats away. And you like to see that. And when you're able to do that to an opposing pitcher, I'll tell you what, man, it's it's more mentally exhausting than it is physically. And you just one after another, it's just a battle and a battle and a battle. And when you do stuff like that to a starting pitcher, chances are you're going to knock them out of the game early, and you're still going to give yourself a chance to maybe come out on top.
I find it really interesting that you said this, because I agree. And anyone, you can watch the games and watch these at-bats, these battles happening. But I think it's different. It's really more of like a 2022 style of battling, because the Blue Jays as a team don't really walk. They have the third lowest walk rate in all of baseball. But what they do, and I think there's nobody who more better exemplifies this than Bo Bichette, and that's they foul pitches off, which is very much a 2022 thing. Just fouling pitches off, fighting, because they are very free swinging. And even in that game, the comeback with Tapia's sack fly, he fouled off a ton of tough pitches before he was able to get one that he could drive deep enough to score Bo Bichette there from third base. So I think I would agree that it's great to see them battling. There are no tough outs, even when they aren't running their A lineup out there right now, or when they're running a lineup out with a couple guys like Bo Bichette or even Lourdes Gurriel, who are treading water a little bit, but they're still talented and they still can put the bat on the ball and just make your life miserable when you're a pitcher. And I think the other piece, getting back to what we said off the top, was that like there's a lot. I think one run games are a bit of a worrisome. I don't think that you can get in the habit of trying to win every one run game. Now the Blue Jays have guys like George Springer, who is, you know, among the kind of recognized as one of the better kind of clutch performers in baseball. You know, baseball nerds have kind of gone back and forth on this. Like, clutch doesn't exist. And if you look at it in a bigger sample, David Ortiz is the example that people have used for years, which is, yes, David Ortiz has an amazing record coming up in big spots and has driven in tons of huge runs. But if you look at David Ortiz's numbers in high leverage spots, they're the same as the numbers at all times, because he's just a good hitter. So he's a good hitter when it matters, and he's a good hitter when it's early in the game or a blowout. And I think that's true of Springer. But I think worried isn't the word, but I'm wary of them kind of boosting. Maybe wary isn't the record. You'd like to see them get a couple blowouts. It's kind of where I'm coming from. Like these one run games they all count, right? All the wins count, but I'd still think a couple blowouts would maybe set my mind at ease.
You're just not ready for those that October feeling yet, right? You just kind of want to settle in. It almost feels like every game has an October type of feeling, like it's a playoff game. Like you're at the edge of your seat, and you look back and you're like, "Golly, this is only April, and I'm about to have a heart attack on these games." And you know, and I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, like I said, people and I'm pretty. I like to use Twitter to kind of communicate with fans and stuff like that. And people are always like, "Well, the offense is not producing. The offense is not doing this." I'm like, sit back and enjoy the wins. At the end of the day, isn't this what we wanted? We wanted wins. We wanted to see this team win. Last year, early in the season, we saw how much they struggled out of the bullpen side, and that became a big question mark. Right now, they're winning. Obviously, there's always going to be something to improve on, and clearly the guys in that clubhouse know that. But let's enjoy the wins, and let's enjoy, like you mentioned at the start of this podcast, it's they enjoy them being in first place right now. And it's not a sprint; it's a marathon, and that's a big cliche used in baseball, but it's the truth. And if this guy's chip away with these wins, at the end of the season, you're going to look back and be like, okay, we're good.
You're absolutely right. You make a great point. And you and I were talking a little bit about golf before we started to record. And one of my favorite lines about when you're talking about golf is, they don't ask how, they ask how many. And if the Blue Jays are trying to win 95, 96, 97 games, that maybe they didn't quote unquote deserve to win them, you know, some early season games, or they were able to take advantage of those rare, or those opportunities that came up. You know, no one's going to complain. You can't take those wins off the board. I think it's some of us, the way that some people we think about the game, it's more about projecting forward than it is even about appreciating the moment. And I think that the way that they're going right now, you know, it's again, you take these wins and you love what the bullpen is giving, but I think you see in the game, the big comeback against Boston versus the game that they lost on Wednesday night, where it was a close game, but then it only takes, you know, one mistake or one misplaced pitch, or, you know, like the walk off in Houston, when just one kind of misplaced fastball and then that game is over. So you hope you appreciate the wins, you count the wins. Yeah. And you hope that they're going to continue to improve so that the games aren't also heart attack inducing.
Yeah. And then you look at a guy like Justin Verlander, he came out and everyone, I kind of started sensing the feeling on social media. We're like, oh man, is he going to throw another no hitter against us? And then bam, like you mentioned, one bad inning, all of a sudden it starts just trickling down. They start getting base hits. And our guy, Santiago Espinal, has just been amazing at the bottom part of that lineup. It's almost like he's become a catalyst down there, and he understands that role of what he needs to do. I mean, all of a sudden, he's turned into kind of a power hitter, too. So that's good to see.
He's all things to all men at this point. He's, I mean, how far has Santiago Espinal come when he was a late-inning pinch hitter as opposed to being the guy who would get pinch hit for? Like, we need a hit. Better bring on Santiago fucking Espinal. And he draws and he has a great plate appearance, right? Like, what a stud. I can't believe it. But this is the guy we're talking about. But a great deal. You know, when you think there were some people mentioned that he was traded for Steve Pierce, who, of course, went on to win the World Series MVP for the Red Sox. But just a huge shot in the arm. And again, I remember talking about this with Caitlin last year, which is, you know, you love to see somebody come up and kind of like steal a job. We were talking about Jonathan David. Is that, am I thinking of?
Yeah, Jonathan Davis. Yeah.
Oh, the center fielder. Sorry, yeah. I was thinking about Jonathan David, like the Canadian soccer, the striker who plays for Team Canada. Jonathan Davis, who I was like, I really love to see him come out and steal a job and like really like put himself in there to play every day. And of course, that didn't quite work out, but that's been all it has. He's made that job his own. He's made himself a key contributor. And whether or not, I mean, when you watch him, I guess is the question is there anything about what he's doing that you think is not real or is like not going to continue? Because he's having great at bats, which he did last year. He just has a bit of a different body and a bit more opportunity to continue to show what he can do.
Yeah. And he's taking full advantage of it. And that's what you like to see. And I keep saying it, like, this guy came in ready. He came in ready to win a job, and he's leaving no doubt. And the more you go out there and you put up good at bats, these are the type of guys that you need in order to continue to win. Yeah, we know what we're going to get out of a Springer. We know what we're going to get out of a Bo, a Vladdy, to Oscar Hernandez. We know what they bring to this game. But when you have the bottom of the lineup setting up tones for the top of the lineup like that, I mean, man, like you mentioned, when you're a pitcher and you're looking at this lineup, you're like, well, there's not a break here. There's not a break here. Shoot. And I have to deal with Santiago Espinal, who seems to be seeing the ball like a beach ball right now. Like, you know, even though I'm sure guys are going to continue to take their shots against him because they're like, there's no way he can continue to do this. And you see the guys, you know, like Verlander challenging him with fastballs, and Espinal is going to say, fuck it, let's go, you know, and he's going to put the bat on the ball and good things happen. And he's making it happen for himself. And even like, you know, Raimel Tapia at the bottom of the lineup, man. Like, the more I watch him and I've paid attention to his at-bats, it's like he takes good at-bats. He might not always come out on top, but it's almost like he takes a huge hack early in the count, and then he kind of like starts battling. And he's not an easy strikeout by any means. And again, you like to see that. At the end of the day, we're in an era of pitch counts, and some of these starters are really, really good. And when you're able to do that to a starting pitcher and knock them out early and get to that bullpen early in the game, I mean, it's a recipe for success. No team wants to get into that bullpen early in the game. And when you do that, you know that, especially leading up to a four-game series, it makes it tough because now you rely on the next day starter to go deep into the game and so on and so forth.
Well, and it's exactly as we were talking about before too, where they're making the Blue Jays offense is not clicking, you know, it's not firing on all cylinders. You know, even though they lead the league in home runs, it's this weird kind of like back and forth where you watch them and you're like, they're capable of so much more, right? There's so much more in this lineup. But then you look and you're like, oh, they've hit more home runs than anybody. But then you realize when the floodgates will really open is when those home runs continue, but there are more and more people on base when they start to hit them, right? And I think you make the point. That said, Tapia, when he came up with that bases loaded, of course he delivered. I don't know about you. He's up there. There's one out. I'm like, man, safety squeeze. Like, let's win the game. But maybe that's, you know, that's not what he's there to do. But at the same time, I'm like, just if he can do even just any kind of bunt, he's going to, you know, either he's going to beat it out or they're going to, like, the chances of them doubling him up on a bunt seem really slim. So I mean, maybe I'm old school. I'm showing my age. I'm like,
it crossed my mind too. It really did. I was like, man, how the energy that it would bring if you saw, like, not even a safety squeeze, but a suicide squeeze or something, you know, just to kind of get it going. But at the end of the day, again, they won the game, and he put up a great at bat. And then another guy prior to him was Alejandro Kirk too. The at bat he put up was amazing. And and when you're battling with two strikes against those relievers that are coming in throwing absolute gas and nasty movement, and you're able to battle them, and then work a walk, I mean, you tip your hat to that.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Alejandro Kirk, I'm having a really difficult time with Alejandro Kirk right now.
Same.
because he does. He is like so many of these guys where he turns in these really high quality at bats. He's walked way more than he's even struck out this year. I think he's only got 6 strikeouts or something in what, 50 plate appearances? Not even. But he doesn't have a single extra base hit this month. So I wonder, like, is something's got to give, right? Which is that, well, let me ask you then, how would you pitch Alejandro Kirk? What's the best way to approach a guy like that? A guy who knows the zone, a guy who's got a great, you know, can really put the ball in play, but maybe you're not so worried about him hurting you with the long ball or with extra base power.
It's definitely a guy that you look in the lineup and you're like, okay, I can work around these guys to get to this guy, and I'm going to pitch to this guy and make sure he doesn't beat me. Obviously, if you leave a ball fat over the plate, he's going to make you pay, but the no extra base hits and stuff like that is, you kind of sit there and look at it and you're like, is Zach Collins running away with his backup job right now? Like, can this possibly happen? Because eventually I believe the rosters are going to trim down, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you kind of start to want, if once Danny comes back, I'm saying, like, I doubt they're going to carry three catchers. And trust me, I'm a huge Alejandro Kirk fan. I love him, man. He's cool. Like, he's fun to watch. But you're seeing Zach Collins come in and just hit absolute tanks. And it's kind of like, you know what? Like, there's only room for two, because usually a team only carries two catchers. So once Danny comes back, I'd hate to be Charlie Montoya.
Absolutely. And it's a tough choice because, you know, something else I want to talk to you about a little bit is defense. So number one, I think there's been some pretty legitimate questions asked about Zach Collins' defense, right? Zach Collins, in particular, I don't know if it was the really awful game where the Jays got that terrible zone, but, you know, Zach Collins' framing maybe isn't quite up to snuff. Maybe could have been part of the kind of knock against him, early on, where Alejandro Kirk, I think a lot of the early criticism of his defense was sort of unfounded. It was mostly more about the way that he looked than it was about the way that he does his job. Because I think he's actually quite a good framer. He ranks as a really, this early on, really good at framing, which is in a lot of ways the job now, right? You know, throwing guys out here and there, but the framing is the job. So do you think that the Blue Jays can carry behind the plate, can deal with some not as much offense in exchange for defense, or how would you kind of sort those things out?
Well, to me, are we saying Danny Jansen's, like, if Danny Jansen's back?
Yeah, I think we can safely say that Danny Jansen is the starter. He's also probably the best defender and the best offensive player when he's going right.
So let's say Danny Jansen's going to catch 5-6 nights a week. Then, yeah, I would trade a bit of the defense for the offense. If Zach Collins is that guy that's going to catch once, maybe twice a week. Because I know what I'm going to get in Danny Jansen. again, this is Alejandro Kirk. Now, if Alejandro Kirk comes out today and goes, you know, 3-for-4 with 2 home runs, and then he starts heating up, then it kind of changes the narrative a little bit. But right now, I mean, yeah, I feel like the team is struggling on offense a bit, and Zach Collins has provided power for you, and I think that's key.
I think that the fact that Zach Collins has offered that left-handed power has looked, if nothing else, decent at the plate, right? He's like, again, he's driving the ball and you know, striking out a lot, but whatever. It makes it really hard to move away from him, because you just kind of fall in love with the idea of a power hitting left-handed catcher, as opposed to a guy who in Kirk, who, you know, you love what he can do, but is he the best player to help the team do what the team needs to do long term? And it's unfortunate, and again, because there's so much to like about Alejandro Kirk. You watch 100%, like, yeah, and but
I've always been a huge fan of his, and yeah, it's I mean, you're seeing a bit of slow starts to certain guys, you know, and you hope that they do get hot. And you know, another guy is obviously Bo Bichette, and he's been the talk lately about what's going on with his bat and stuff like that. So you just hope that these guys find a groove. Again, you wish the offense could click for 162 games, but people, listen to me. It's not possible. It's not possible. But the good thing, again, they're winning these games even without these guys getting hot. And and that's the key. Once these guys get hot, because there's going to come a stretch where Vladdy kind of hits a little bit of a slump, you know, George Springer too. And it's just the ups and downs of a baseball season. But that's where you hope Bo starts getting hot and he picks up the offense a little bit, and vice versa. So it's a trickling effect, and you just hope that these guys feed off each other.
I feel like Vlad in a lot of ways is kind of very reflective of the team at large, which is that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think has 8 extra base hits this year, and he got 4 of them in one game. So he's not quite, you know, firing on all cylinders, but he's so good, right? He's starting from such a high floor that he's fine. And you're not aware of the fact that he's not quite, you know, doing exactly everything that we've seen him do in through all of last year. And so he's so obviously capable of, but
it's funny you say that, because last night before I went to bed, I was like, is Vladdy struggling? Because I haven't really seen him be the Vladdy that, like you said, he set himself for such a high ceiling. And then I look at his batting average and he's hitting over 300, and I'm like, okay, no, he's fine. It's just, it's been a quiet 300. And it just seems like you said, he's just gets his base hits here and there. And but it's just, it's weird how that works. Like these guys, he goes and does what he did in New York, and you kind of expect to see that night in every night. And then it just hasn't happened, but it's like, again, he's having a solid start to the season, and obviously he's a reason why this team has won lots of ball games too.
He has the quietest 380 on base and like 560 slugging you could ever ask for. One thing I want to talk to ask you about, because I'd love to know what you think, which is one of the things I think you can attribute to the Blue Jays this year is a much improved defense. Now, some of that obviously is an improved personnel. Number one, in the person of Matt Chapman, who's as good as it gets. I'm getting some more time from George Springer, who made some spectacular catches. You know, I'm not 100%. I mean, it's so early, but maybe the spectacular might outweigh some of the other plays that are harder to make. But the Blue Jays shift more than anybody in baseball right now. Exaggerated shift, 4-man outfield, you know, throwing the guy way out there. How do you feel about the shift? Like, would you like to play behind a defense that's shifting around as much like this, or sorry, with the defense behind you? And do you think that this is something that's going to continue for them to be able to shift at this really high level and really go all in on this, like betting on the analytics and betting on guys hitting into the defense?
If it works, I'm for it, you know. But again, for me personally, I feel like I was a ground ball pitcher when I was on top. I struck out guys, but I wasn't like double digits every game or high up there. It was more, I'm going to pitch to contact and you're going to see a lot of ground balls. So I feel like the shifting kind of began when I kind of broke into the big leagues, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But Brian Butterfield, if you remember him, third base mm-hmm. coach, mm-hmm. and he was big into the shift, and he would come up to me, and this is before the analytics and the data and all that, and be like, hey, what if we move this guy here? Would you be okay? I'm like, yeah, if you do that, then I can pitch him a certain way so that he can hit it into the shift. But mm-hmm. it wasn't as big as it is now. So I see the benefits of it, and I obviously see the frustration in pitchers when it doesn't work and it finds a hole and you're like, oh man, that could have been the game or the inning ending double play. But I mean, does the data shows that the shift works more often than not, correct?
Well, so the data shows, I think, on ground balls, and I'm not 100% sure. I know that Russell Carlton at Baseball Prospectus has done a lot of really good work on it, and some there's some belief that maybe it works. It's less efficient. I think it depends. I think the shift against right-handed batters in particular has, like, iffy. I think when you see these extreme shifts against the lefties, and you know, because it's really just taking the idea of an infielder and stretching it to its most absurd. I remember going to a game, and I was sitting up in the right field bleachers, a Blue Jays game, and when Brett Laurie was playing third base, and it was from that perspective that I realized, as opposed to on TV, just how deep into like shallow right field those guys are playing.
Yeah.
And you see it against, again, you know, the Orioles are playing against Yankees, and they, the Orioles went with four outfielders against Joey Gallo. But then you look and you realize that third baseman or shortstop, whoever's out there, that's basically like they almost had five outfielders mm-hmm. against Joey Gallo. And I mean, there are guys like that, guys who don't hit the ball on the ground the other way at all. I mean, they used to do it against Jose Bautista, for example, you know, a lot, again, a dead red, you know, pull hitter, you hit everything on the ground that way. So I think there's that risk and reward, but over, I think when you're doing it as much as the Blue Jays are, you tend to, you're looking to maximize that over the long haul, yeah. right? Because if you, I feel like if you pick your spots more, there's more gamble involved with it, as opposed to being like, this is just how we defend. We move mm-hmm. these guys around. We throw, yeah. we do four outfielders. So I think that if it's going to work, if it's again, knowing the pitching staff and looking to extract every out you can and like make sure if you have a chance to make an out, then you're going to get it. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it. It's when people start to like combat it, actively combat it, as opposed to being like, oh, he sort of like hit the ball at the middle and there was nobody there. But I think it's when you start to see those guys kind of bunting against it or slapping balls.
Let me ask you this, Drew. Do you think it's changed the perspective of the Blue Jays because of Matt Chapman at third base? Like shifting guys a little bit more than normal and them being the highest shifted team?
I think that Matt Chapman, it gives them a tool on the when he's like alone on the left side that they wouldn't have had before.
Yeah.
And I think that Matt Chapman, just in general, gives them an edge in that it takes some of the pressure off of like Bo Bichette to be as rangy, right? We, you know, I think we talked about this with Caitlin and I talked about this, like, you know, just the difference in the arm and like what it takes for Chapman to gear up and throw across the infield versus when you see with Bichette, especially when he's kind of getting towards the hole, it's all he's got to get it across the infield sometimes. And Chapman's arm strength is just so easy and it's just like so unnatural. But but I think it really gives him an edge. And I think it also can help to, you know, running four outfielders. I mean, you see the good and the bad with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. out there. He's got a great arm, but takes some goofy routes. And no one, Teoscar Hernandez, it's so crazy that Teoscar Hernandez's defense was such a concern for so long. And now it's just like, we don't even talk about it. He's so athletic. He's one of the fastest runners on the team and having a decent center fielder. And the other thing I would say also is that you could see that commitment to defense in the guys they brought in, right? In Tapia and Bradley Zimmer. Like Zimmer is there to do that job, right? He can, when they can do that, just like the Astros used to do, where it's like late innings, you bring in the glove and then you move Springer over to right. And
it's crazy because Zimmer to me doesn't look fast, but when you see him take a route on a ball, it's like he glides. He reminds me a little bit of like Kobe Rasmus, where he wasn't like the fastest guy on the team, but the way they got jumped off the bat is amazing, man. And these guys just glide to the ball and it's just like they make it look so easy. And that's what's cool when you see guys that are able to do that, have that skill in their back pocket. And Bradley Zimmer definitely has that.
It's one of the weirdest things, I think, as for a fan. And I think, again, TV can almost make it look easier than it is, where it's like a guy runs from eight, like he runs and he knows exactly where the ball is going to land. Right. And you see them make, take like a direct route and they're there, the ball, and they arrive at the same time. And it's like, that's hard to do. I don't know how these, you know, let's talk about the internal clock, right? That they just know how much time they've got. They can judge it so quickly. Bradley Zimmer, by the way, according to StatCast, is 88th percentile sprint speed. So he's a really fast guy, like no matter how you slice it. He has those big, long strides just eating up that space. So
that's, trust me, I came up with one of the best in Vernon Wells.
Yeah.
And the way he got to the ball so quick. And again, Vernon wasn't the fastest guy on the team, but those jumps he'd get off the bat. And for me, when I would be shagging, I'd watch these guys just sit there and practice and batting practice. And just the way that, like, I'd try to emulate their jumps, and they're just on another level. Like, they see it right off the crack of the bat. The special guys do, and they just know where the ball is going to be every time. And I'm like, golly, that's big league defense for you right there.
the big league defense, I don't know the speed of those guys. Like, I remember reading the only thing it has to do is work, or sort of the book that Sam Miller and Ben Lindbergh wrote, and they general manage like an independent league team, and they were talking about the fastest guy on their team, who's like the speed guy, would have been about average on a big league team, because like just the level of athleticism in these guys. Like if you ran, if I was, you know, we were talking about me playing men's league sports. If I was trying to run alongside Bradley Zimmer in real life, it would be like, I take two steps and he's already like at first base, that sort of thing. Like just that next level of athleticism. And it shows itself in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
More spin rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think at the end, we just to kind of put a bow on that last conversation. So we talked about the defense and just those are the things I think to that make it easier to win these close games, to come back and win one-run games or hang on to these one-run leads. But hopefully, again, you don't have to rely on that. This is all part of making a good team. But at the end of the day, these are games that they've won, right? They're what, 12-7 here when we're recording, and they're going to play a game this afternoon. So you can't erase those games. And it looks like that, again, the Yankees are off to a really good start. So every win counts. You get them how you can, and you just can see, I think, with this Blue Jays team that a few more things are going to start to click and they'll be fine.
Yeah. And we're watching it. Oh, we're seeing it, you know, the rotation seems to kind of have taken a little bit of a step forward. It was like the first few starts, it was just Manoah and Gausman. And mm-hmm. now it seems like Berrios has kind of turned it on. And let me tell you this, when you face a team twice in like a week, it's not easy. Like what Berrios was able to do in Fenway, and then he came back and then shut him out at home first, or he gave up 2 runs in 7 innings. It's not easy because it's just, it's kind of like, man, I got to face this lineup again. I wish I was getting a different look, but you know, but he went out there and did his thing, and it almost seems like he's kind of gotten on a roll. Gausman, I mean, golly, man, like the start that he's had has been a dream. This is exactly why you pay top dollar for him. And it's crazy because, you know, you've seen the evolution of Kevin Gausman from the Oreo days to the Braves. And then he goes to San Francisco, and you don't always know if it's going to translate from the NL West, because you pitch in such big ballparks. You start wondering like, oh, is this going to translate to the AL East, where the stadiums are not as big as they are on the NL West? And he's left no doubt, man. I mean, he's a treat to watch. And if you're a fan, man, lock it in every fifth day when that guy's throwing, because it is fun, and he's definitely been amazing to watch. And then we all know what Manoah has done. You know, he's just, it seems like there's just no stopping that guy right now. And every quality starts after quality starts, and and I mean, unsung hero Ross Stripling again. We talked a bit about him last night and what he's able to do, and just the type of how big it is to have that type of pitcher in your rotation. Like, what a luxury. Like, this guy can be a starter. He can be a long reliever. And trust me, it ain't easy to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But this guy's making it look easy. And you hope that Ryu obviously is feeling better, and he's you know, coming within himself so that he's able to help this rotation. And then Kikuchi, man, it's just... I don't know, Drew. I mean, you tell, he's frustrating to watch, because I sit there and I'm like, I wish I threw 95, 96, 97 whenever I want it. And how is this guy getting hit? And I feel like everyone sees the nasty stuff, and I feel like he just doesn't trust it yet. And trust me, it took me a long time. And it was actually John Schneider, out of all people, when he was my catcher in Double A, and he said, dude, the day you realize how good your stuff can be is the day that this is going to turn around for you. The day you realize how good your stuff can be, this is when it's going to turn around for you. And I feel like Kikuchi, we've seen flashes of it. I saw flashes of it last year with the Seattle Mariners. And then it's just an up and down, up and down, up and down. So you hope that he trusts his fastball. For me, it's trust your fastball, man. Stop nibbling around. 95, 96, 97 ain't easy to hit. You talk to any hitter from the left, especially from the left side, you talk to any hitter, they'll tell you, man, that's tough to hit, a well-located fastball. It's when he starts nibbling, to me, that he kind of falls in trouble, and then obviously he has to come with 95 down the middle.
I want, in my mind, I want Ross Stripling and Yusei Kikuchi to sit down side by side and just talk. Because, you know, you talked about this unsung hero, and Stripling has pitched so well, but he does it in like a way that is, I mean, baseball's come so, is changed so much. The Ross Stripling throws 92, right? That he sits mm-hmm. 92, which is by any regular human measure, unbelievable. Like if I was standing in against Ross Stripling, the sound of 92 would probably make me lose my mind. Like I would jump out of the batter's box. If he said, I'm going to throw it on the outside half, and I would be standing there shaking, and I would die. At 92, and that is well below average this year. But he uses his four-seam fastball so well. You know, throwing it at guys like JD Martinez, like throwing it past him. I was just looking mm-hmm. at his numbers this year. He's got like a, you know, 34% whiff rate on his four-seam fastball. It's the pitch he throws the most as a put-away pitch. And he throws 92. So mm-hmm. what does Stripling know that Kikuchi doesn't yet? And you hope that somehow, mm-hmm. like over time, and I'm sure that the Blue Jays, A, know what kind of a weapon he's got there. And if it's about trusting your stuff, or it's about pitching backwards, or if that's what he does, or if it's not, I mean, that doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, pitching backwards, nobody throws a first pitch fastball to save their lives. So you just throw the fastball at the end of the count when you're trying to get the strikeout. So hopefully, again, Kikuchi can kind of maybe feel, if it's a matter of command, if it's a matter of if he's worried about missing over the middle or whatever it might be. But You just love to see those two guys kind of like you tell him how to do what you do, and then he'll be good.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's just, you see it. That's the thing. You see the flashes of it. You're like, that start against Houston, you saw that one inning he came out and you're like, whoa, like this is, he's got it going. And then the next inning, it's a hiccup. And it's like, and I feel like it's like that with this guy. And again, as the great Pat Henkin used to tell me, a well-located fastball is tough to hit, no matter if it's 89, 92, 94, 95, no matter what it is. Like, if you locate your fastball well, now I'm not talking about nibbling. Don't nibble around the corners. Just locate the fastball. And again, he's got 97 in his back pocket whenever he wants. So that's why it's a bit frustrating to watch him. And I'm like, oh, man, like, this guy's got such good stuff. Like, what I would do to be able to throw that whenever I want it, you know? So, again, I think there's obviously, and I'm sure him and Pete are hammering it down. And again, he shows flashes of it. Now it's just him believing in it that he can pitch to contact more.
I think it takes time, too. That's the sense you get. And that's something that you think about from, like, a player development standpoint, something the Blue Jays talk about. And which is not only does this guy have a skill that we can refine, or does this guy does a thing that we can build on, but it's like, is he ready and willing to try it? And I don't know that Yusei Kikuchi is not that. It's going to take time, right? It's going to take time to build that. I think to build that confidence, to know like, yeah, it's 1-2, but you know, you're ahead 1-2, but you should still go back to the fastball here. Like throw it up in the zone as opposed to trying to like bury a slider in the dirt and have the guy embarrass himself. Like they all count the same, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Stripling and Gausman are both great examples. And even to contrast a little bit against Barrios, like Gausman and Ross Stripling in particular, like it's so hard to square up. You look at his numbers and he's just like allowed such a small amount of hard hit balls. You know, some of the like his average exit velocity is among the best in the league. And again, he throws 92. His fastball doesn't spin for shit, but he can just, like you said, a well-located fastball and dots it. And he throws it in counts where guys are off balance. And I think that Barrios is like, struggled a little bit in that he's been getting hit hard, but the results were good. And I think that that's the mark of a guy who is exactly what he is, right? He takes the ball 32, 33 times a year. He goes out, he's going to eat innings, and he's going to find his touch and find his command in a way that it's now he's not getting hit hard anymore. And it's not such a struggle to get through some of those innings. And he's going to really like take that next step forward and be, you know, one of the four number twos that this offense can, or this rotation can kind of boast.
Yeah. Cause you look at Manoa and it's like, he knows his 95, 96 is 120. He has that mentality that, all right, I'm going to challenge you. And then on top of that, I'll throw that wipeout slider and punch you out whenever, but I'm going to challenge you with my heater. And he comes at guys. And when you're jumping ahead and when you have good rhythm on the mound, it makes the world of difference to a hitter, you know. But if you're ball one, strike one, ball two, strike two, and then, you know, it just gives these hitters to time you a little bit better. But when you're on top, and I'm not saying Kikuchi has to be the, you know, the big bad guy on the mound like Manoa is, you know, but you know, take some of that mentality, watch it and be like, man, this guy uses his 95, 96 really, really well. What if I went and did that, you know, and jumped ahead of guys and like that, it gives me a little bit of room for error. And I feel like if he does that, Kikuchi is going to be, you know, what we thought he was going to be or what we think he's going to be because of his stuff. Again, he's got all the stuff, all the tools. And now it's just, I read a good tweet about him. It says, I keep hearing about Kikuchi's stuff. I keep waiting for Kikuchi to believe in it. And it's true.
Someone should send it to him in a DM. Like, hey, have you seen this? Let's take a look at your stuff. What if I told you there's a left-hander who throws 95, 96, got a really nice slider, messes around maybe with a cutter too much? You wouldn't believe how good that guy is. He's you. By the way, Alek Manoa, absolutely, like, in a lot of ways, like I can't see him. His strikeout rate's good, right? He strikes out, what, 25% of batters he's faced this year, which is above average. I can't see him becoming like a Gerrit Cole, you know, 30%, like some kind of strikeout monster. But at the same time, everything that Alek Manoa does is the stuff that you'd want a starting pitcher to do, right?
Oh my
strikes
God.
Strikes guys out, throws strikes, and doesn't get hit hard. It's the total package.
And it's it's a mentality too that he takes to the mound. You're like, damn, this guy is a motherfucker on the mound. Like he just has that mentality, right? I mean, he wants to fight. I feel like every hitter that gets up, like you see him talking to himself, you see him kind of walking around, and you're like, okay, like this guy brings it every fifth day. He really does, and it's fun to watch. It's just a different mentality than a Berrios and a Gausman, the way they carry themselves. Mm-hmm. And then you get Big Bad Manoah, and it's like, I'm here, and this is my mound, and I'm gonna go out there and kick your ass.
I feel like he's toned down the thing where he would like rub the ball up and like stare at the batter. I feel like that. I mean, which is not necessarily a bad thing, right? If there's so much talk about the baseball culture and kind of like, you know, the unwritten rules and things, I get the sense that maybe a couple of veterans are like, just maybe take it easy with the stare down of the batter, but like still do you, right? It's really important. I think it's important to find that balance, and hopefully Kikuchi can, again, no one's asking Kikuchi to be the ace, right? No one's expecting him to win 20 games and throw 200 innings at 2 ERA. Just, you know, come out there. Get to the lineup twice. Right, just come out and give us your bet, give us your best. Give me 18 outs. I'm happy,
but beyond happy with 18 outs. Yeah,
yeah.
And listen, like we're talking about this, and like, you know, he doesn't have to be a Manoah. Like I bring myself as an example just because of my experiences. I knew I was never going to be a Roy Halladay, and even the day he left, I knew I wasn't going to be Roy Halladay. But I took bits and pieces of his game and his mentality, and I applied it to my own. Like, you know, for example, for him, he wasn't satisfied with 18 outs. He wanted 27. So I was like, man, I want to do that. I want to follow that. So he wasn't the guy. He wasn't an Alec Manoah on the mound, but you saw the intensity in his eyes every time he went out there and how focused he was, and little stuff like that, that I feel like as a starting pitcher or just a pitcher in general, you can take this kind of stuff and apply it to your game and be like, okay, this fits me, this doesn't. And I feel like that's what makes you better. And in this game, you can never stop learning.
Alec Manoah doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who you're going to catch like peeking into the dugout in like the fifth inning. Maybe like, yo, maybe you want to come and get me, or early in the sixth. Like I got my decision. You know, let's see if we can spare the ERA. That does not seem like that's Alec Manoah's way that he's ever going to operate.
Yeah. No, and it's good to see a rotation. Again, you're going to need, you know, all these guys to be clicking, and right now it's fun when they get on a roll like this, and it's going to be fun when both sides of the offense and defense are clicking, and next thing you know, you're going to be like, wow, now we're seeing these 10-0 games and a complete game or something like that, you know. And it's just patience, and again, enjoy the wins.
Enjoy the gauntlet season. That's the other thing to think about if you're a Blue Jays fan, that I need to remember too, that eking out wins or having a maybe unsustainable record in one run games, this is as tough as the schedule is going to get.
Yeah.
Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, Red Sox, Astros coming in to face the Blue Jays. Again, like you said, that challenge, that extra bit of difficulty facing a team right after another. But, you know, the Blue Jays played Houston tough on the road. Now they're back, of course, in Toronto where they play so well. I saw some really interesting stuff from Red Sox fans. I saw somebody had been into like Red Sox Reddit and was talking about how the Blue Jays almost feel inevitable in that ballpark, right? The Blue Jays with their comebacks and George Springer, as an example of the guy who comes up late in the game, and you're just like, it doesn't matter who we put out there. It feels like he's going to get him. So a really exciting and fun time to be a Blue Jays fan. Remember those things. Remember that those are Red Sox fans who are dreading seeing things happen here at the Rogers Center. So Blue Jays got the Astros coming up. Going to be a really exciting series. I will be back in a few days with Caitlin, and then Ricky and I will be back in 1 week's time to talk more about your Toronto Blue Jays. His name is Ricky. My name is Drew. I'll talk to you next time on Spinners.